Chapter 2. At the height of her remarkable career, Dorothy Kilgallen, of whom the New York Post Daily Magazine wrote, "Wherever she goes, fame precedes her, envy follows her, and a crowd looks on. She is one of the communication marvels of the age. Could write about most any topic." These included famous criminal trials like Jack Ruby's, celebrity gossip, the latest fashions, and the national or local political scene. No wonder Paul Schoenstein, the editor at the New York Journal-American, who believed Kilgallen had real promise as a reporter, said boldly, "Dorothy was far and away the greatest reporter there was." Glimpsing a December 1959 column wishing a plethora of personalities and her vast newspaper audience, numbering in the millions, a Merry Christmas, provides additional insight into Kilgallen's incredible acumen as a superb wordsmith. It also highlights her creative abilities, the poet in her. As an example, she writes after offering Merry Christmas to all, "The whole town is talking. Excitement abounds, for a glorious story is going the rounds. The buzz is on Broadway from dawn until dark. There's glorious clamor in Gramercy Park. It's sweeping through Broome Street. It's waltzing in Wall." Typing away in the Kloop, her private office at the townhouse, Kilgallen extended holiday wishes to prominent local and national figures. They included President Dwight Eisenhower, New York City Mayor Robert Wagner, actresses Sophia Loren, Greta Garbo, and Marlena Dietrich, actor Cary Grant, author Truman Capote, and even champion boxer Jack Dempsey. Much had happened in Kilgallen's life by then, more than 40 years after she was born in Chicago on July 3, 1913. There was a violent rainstorm that day, one that saturated the sidewalks around her family's low-rent apartment at Garfield Boulevard and Morgan Street. Kilgallen's father, Jim, a slim, serious-minded man and highly respected Hearst newspaper chain reporter, had been born in Pittston, Pennsylvania, the son of an Irish immigrant. This heritage traces back to County Mayo, located on the west coast of Ireland. An 1850s photograph depicts Dorothy's great-grandfather, Andrew Kilgallen, alongside her great-grandmother, formerly Mary Hyland. She is wearing what is known as a Mayo shawl. The original Kilgallen house remains standing today. The couple's son, John, Dorothy's grandfather and one of 10 children, was Jim, Kilgallen's father. People also called him Jimmy or Kill. His first experience as a reporter had been covering the cattle and hog market for the Chicago Daily Farmers and Drovers Journal. Colleagues later described Jim as slightly built, dapper, rough around the edges, ambitious, and amiable. A chance meeting in Denver permitted Jim to meet Kilgallen's native-born Catholic mother, May, where she performed as an aspiring singer. The name Dorothy was chosen because it meant gift from heaven. Early on, Kilgallen knew of her dad's reputation as a reporter, but only later would she learn that his editor said of him, "When Jim got hold of a story, he was just like a bulldog. He'd get his teeth in it and never let go." Many years later, the same plaudits would be heaped upon Dorothy Kilgallen, like father, like daughter. Kilgallen's father, who always wore a traditional bowler, traveled a great deal, and she and her sister Eleanor, 6 years younger than Dorothy, pouted when he was gone for any length of time. However, he brought smiles to their faces when he returned by telling the girls fascinating stories about his journalistic adventures, including interviewing Thomas Edison and mobster Al Capone. Of the latter, Jim said, "I was sweating all the time I was around Scarface. He had a gun lying on the restaurant table beside his ravioli." One prized possession Jim brought his elder daughter from Hollywood was a chunk of wood from famed actor Rudolph Valentino's coffin. Jim knew Dorothy loved acting, and the coffin had the initials DMK carved on the side. She kept the prized chunk of wood right next to a thriving doll collection she had started as a very young girl. The family was close-knit, and laughter paraded through the air, except when Kilgallen argued with her mother about future plans. May intended Kilgallen to be a schoolteacher and teach English, but the reporter bug had bitten her at an early age, as she experienced being a journalist vicariously through her father. When the family moved to the Flatbush section of Brooklyn, New York, so Jim could join the New York Evening Journal's Hearst family there, Kilgallen continued idolizing her dad. On a daily basis, she peppered him with questions about his chosen profession. Ever curious, Kilgallen read every newspaper she could find. When an article interested her, she clipped it and then either taped it to a mirror above her desk or saved it in a drawer for safekeeping. Kilgallen attended school in a red brick building, Public School 119, close to her home. Despite her mother's prodding, her grades were only a bit above average. The Catholic family attended nearby St. Elizabeth's Catholic Church and St. Thomas Aquinas Church. Besides being interested in acting, she had appeared in a stage play at an early age, Kilgallen read book after book retrieved from a nearby library. Her favorite was the Elsie Dinsmore series, written by Martha Finley in the late 1800s and early 1900s. The books featured the 19th century fictional chronicles of a beautiful young heiress in the Civil War South. Kilgallen later told an interviewer she admired Finley's dramatic writing style, one she apparently decided to emulate. Early on, Kilgallen had a streak of shyness, but as she grew older, a lively personality shone through when mingling with friends. She especially enjoyed school dances. Boys were attracted to her, but her feelings were hurt when she learned a schoolmate called her stuck up and made fun of her hairstyle. A description at the time noted Kilgallen was of medium height and skinny like her father, parted her dark hair in the middle, and had thin lips. When her mother caught her wearing lipstick at too early an age, Kilgallen was grounded. When Kilgallen and a school chum had a spat causing harsh words, Kilgallen said boldly, "I'll show you. Someday I'll be very famous, and all of you will read about me." Lacking confidence was certainly never a Kilgallen trademark. Kilgallen did not keep a diary, but wrote several poems, short stories, and letters to friends she had known in Chicago. One short story chronicled a family visit to the Empire State Building. She wrote, "I could see the whole world from the top, all the way to California." By all accounts, Kilgallen's first published letter was to the editor of the Brooklyn Eagle. Her father was quite proud when it was published, amazed that the editor thought it was written by an adult, an indication that Kilgallen had talent as a wordsmith, a talent passed on by her talented father. She signed the letter Dorothy Lorington, apparently to establish her own identity, a sign of the independent streak filtering into her personality in later years. Kilgallen's imagination ran wild at times. One day she skipped school to see a favorite movie. When she returned home, Jim asked her what had happened at school that day. Ruffled, Kilgallen said she didn't go since a friend had chicken pox and she had to get some medicine for her at a pharmacy. Unfortunately, a neighbor told Jim she had seen Kilgallen at the movies. Kilgallen was grounded again. During her tenure as an associate editor of The Erasmian, her high school's literary magazine, Kilgallen tried her hand at fiction by publishing the story of an English aviator and his romance with an Italian peasant girl. An excerpt read, "When he flies away without her, she tortures her dog to appease her bitterness. The flyer returns later, tarries a while, then tries to sneak off without her again. This time the plane crashes, the flyer is killed, and the girl, an evil glint in her eyes, walks off, stroking the file with which she had cut the wires in his plane." Whenever possible, Kilgallen visited her dad's Evening Journal office in New York City. Wide-eyed, she listened to the reporters talk about the various stories they were covering, soaking up the buzz of the newsroom. Curious as to what drove him to become so prominent, leading to accolades for his reporting skills, she asked, "Dad, what is the most important aspect of being a journalist?" Without hesitation, Jim replied, "Telling the truth." Kilgallen never forgot these words, ones that would become the foundation of everything she wrote in the coming years, and ultimately lead to her baffling death many years later. Kilgallen's just above average grades restricted college alternatives, but she didn't care. All she wanted to do was become a reporter like her father. To convince him, she wrote several stories for his review. Some were about dreams she had, others about trips to exciting foreign countries, and one where she was a Red Cross nurse during a war in Europe. Later she would recall that sitting with her dad as he helped her improve her storytelling was one of the most pleasant memories during her growing up years. To please her mother, one year after the family withstood the horrors of the stock market crash in 1929, Kilgallen reluctantly entered the College of New Rochelle, located 25 miles from Brooklyn. A classmate named George Quetenin said later that she had fine and Irish skin, very large blue eyes, and that her figure was well-developed. Compliments contrary to those during her earlier years. Kilgallen appreciated Quetenin's words of praise, but felt what he said was a sexist remark, one symbolic of those she later disdained when fame came her way. If there was one defining moment in Kilgallen becoming a reporter, it happened in 1931, when the average cost of a new house was $6,790. Average wages per year equaled $1,850, and the cost of a gallon of gas was 10 cents. For months on end, Kilgallen had been begging her father to speak with Amater Spiro, the Evening Journal's city editor, to see if he, as a favor to Jim, might give her a shot at becoming a reporter during a 2-week trial period. Spiro acquiesced, and the favor permitted Kilgallen the chance she needed. At the end of the day, her father had to pry her away from the newsroom. One time she tried to convince him to let her stay overnight to finish a story. Jim laughed and took his daughter home. When it was time to resume studies at the college, Kilgallen spent hours trying to convince her mother not to send in the tuition check. May Kilgallen resisted, but when tears rolled down her daughter's cheeks one evening as she begged to stay at the newspaper, May finally agreed, despite believing reporters drank too much and stayed out too late. As a teenager, among female reporters who had been toiling at the newspaper for decades, Kilgallen realized women were not just supposed to take a back seat to men, but be content to ride in the car behind the car where the men rode, thus deferring to the male persuasion at every turn. Undaunted, and to gain the attention of Spiro, she rewrote an article submitted by one of the veteran reporters. Instead of criticizing the effort, Spiro praised it, giving Kilgallen the confidence to know she could compete with the more experienced reporters. On a daily basis, Jim encouraged his daughter, helping her refine each story, then rewrite and rewrite some more. He also warned her against believing everything people told her. One story she pursued involved an elderly woman who swore her parakeet had been stolen from her car. Kilgallen doggedly investigated for days before discovering the lonely seamstress had made up the story. Jim scolded her for being naive, for not checking the facts well enough. Criminal trials in and around New York City were a subject of great interest at the Evening Journal, and Kilgallen aspired to cover them. When there was a headline maker involving the beating death of a woman her own age, she was assigned to the case. Immediately, the workings of the criminal justice system fascinated her. She loved the tense courtroom atmosphere, the drama of watching the witnesses testify, the lawyers argue, the point in time when the jury returned with a verdict. One headline she wrote read, "Judge calls jewelry thief knucklehead." Kilgallen's first attempt at an article as Cub reporter describing the trial proceedings was a dismal failure. But even at a tender young age, she showed moxie and a never-give-up attitude. The first draft was rejected with harsh comments. Then a second, a third, and even a fourth, with giant-sized tears running down her cheeks, the result. Finally, exhausted, Kilgallen celebrated with her father when the fifth draft was published. Her dad's face was beaming, and he showed the article to everyone he knew. Covering a high-profile follow-up trial was Kilgallen's reward from the editors. It involved a sensational case in the Bronx, where a woman was charged with killing her philandering husband. Kilgallen's headline read, "Police say woman poisoned husband's chocolate pudding with arsenic." At the courtroom entrance, a proud Kilgallen was able to display her New York police press card. Kilgallen's articles about this trial and others were a hit with readers, permitting a noteworthy body of work for someone of such a young age. How proud her father was when the Evening Journal editors decided to post a 3/4-page promotional ad touting her reporting. To read one of Dorothy Kilgallen's brilliantly written stories, it might be an interview with a famous politician or a gangster. It might be the current day-by-day reporting of a famous murder trial. One would immediately infer, here is the writing of a veteran newspaper woman with a lifetime of experience in reporting. A glance at the picture above will show how far from the facts such an impression can be. For Dorothy Kilgallen is only 20 years old. She is a modern, up-to-the-minute woman reporter. With her versatile, sparkling writing, and her far beyond her years perception and power of observation, she can cover everything from a baby shower to a sensational police court trial. If this ad wasn't enough, Kilgallen's photo appeared in another, alongside heralded reporters Walter Winchell, Louis Sobel, and Charlie Knickerbocker. The fast-rising journalist had achieved stardom, an amazing feat considering her age and experience. The family celebrated with a trip to Times Square. Kilgallen wrote, "It was like going to Hollywood. The excitement, the bright lights, the jugglers, the clowns, people acting like it was New Year's Eve in July." In 1934, at age 21, Kilgallen was assigned to cover the infamous Anna Antonio murder-for-hire trial that had captured the public's imagination. The slight Italian woman was alleged by prosecutors to have paid drug dealers $800 to kill her husband, Salvatore. Kilgallen's front-page story announced the guilty verdict, but it was the visual account of little Anna being electrocuted at Sing Sing that proved Kilgallen was a reporter to be reckoned with in the future.